Welcome to episode 28 of the Book Wars Pod. I'm here with Kate and Chris. I am Kristen, and on this episode of the pod, we are starting From a Certain Point of View, which is by a whole buttload of authors, and we're actually super really excited to talk about it because it's fucking cool, and it has a lot of authors that we've read already, so that is very fun. But first we wanted to address some of the Marvel Comics fuck shit that is happening. So I'm gonna kick it to Kate, who was kind enough to take that task on.
What joy. Marvel Comics fuck shit is exactly right. So we are recording this on December 1st, and what was it, on Wednesday that this came out? Something like that.
Oh, I think it was Tuesday, because it was the day the pod dropped with our comments.
Oh, that's right. It was Tuesday the 29th. Tuesday the 29th.
Ugh, sure. What a shitty week. Anyway, so as you have probably heard by now, by the time this episode is dropping, Marvel recently promoted to editor-in-chief C.B. Cebulski, who, it came out on Tuesday, has previously written comics under the name of a Japanese person, like just some made-up Japanese name, in order to get around some rules at Marvel that say that their writers couldn't write for other comic houses while they were writing at Marvel. So he was pretending to be a Japanese guy, made up a whole backstory and bio for this imaginary person, and wrote for Dark Horse and some other outfits, and just people at Marvel leadership found out about this, and they continued to keep him on and promote him anyway, and now he's actually Marvel leadership, which is a sack of bullshit. I hope I don't need to explain to you why, especially because C.B. Cebulski, in case you couldn't tell by his name, is a white dude. I am an Asian lady, and I'm super, super not down with people pretending to be Asian when they're not. I don't care how many years he says he lived in Japan. So, as a result, until this dude is fired or leaves Marvel or whatever, we are no longer going to be covering any of the Star Wars comics that Marvel publishes on this podcast. Unfortunately, the news dropped the last time we talked about comics. So when is this? This is coming out Tuesday.
This is coming out.
Last Tuesday we had an episode that we recorded before Thanksgiving talking about the comics. And obviously at that point we didn't know fuck all what was going on at Marvel with this nonsense. So that is the last comics episode we are going to be doing for the foreseeable future, and please know that we would not have even recorded it if we knew what all crapola was going on over there. But anyhow, that's our statement, because we support diversity and inclusion in all forms of media, and that includes comics, for the love of God. And yeah, we're not going to stand for this, so just like kiss your free publicity goodbye or whatever, I guess.
Thank you. All 40 of our listeners. Yes. Now.
Yep.
As they probably already assumed.
Yeah, we have some smart listeners.
Sure do.
Right.
Well, thank you, Kate, for that wonderfully helpful, illuminating, and just good taking down of this white fucker.
Damn
sucks.
White people.
I will say, I'm really happy that we're reading From a Certain Point of View now. Like, it's really perfect that that's what we're reading right now, because it's, like, kind of the perfect palate cleanser to just the horrible taste that Marvel has left in our mouths with this, because one of Del Rey's stated missions when they were putting together the roster of authors for From a Certain Point of View was not just to bring more sorry, Kate was telling me to get closer to the mic, not just to bring more authors into the Star Wars fold, but specifically to bring in authors of color, queer authors, authors who don't have as much experience, don't necessarily have the experience that they would get recruited to do a standalone Star Wars book at this stage, but to bring them into the Star Wars family. So you have people like, and now I don't have the book in front of me and I'm terrible with names, but you have...
You're not terrible with names, Chris.
That's true. I'm not you. This is
correct. It's just me.
But I mean, like, for example, it's a fucking tragedy that Ken Liu was not asked to write a Star Wars story before this. He's a Hugo and Nebula Award winning author. He's huge in the sci-fi publishing community, and he hasn't done any sort of Star Wars book before this and The Legends of Luke Skywalker.
I was going to say, he did do Legends of Luke Skywalker, so he's now firmly in the Star Wars family.
Absolutely, but I mean, he's been huge before then.
Yes. Yeah, no, and God, please, Delray, let him write a Luke, like, adult level novel after Last Jedi comes out, because I have not read it yet, but from everything I've heard about Legends of Luke Skywalker, he apparently just nails it.
You just wanted to rewrite Heir to the Jedi.
Oh, no, I wanted to write something better.
Well, you know, like a replacement for.
Ugh. Ugh. Speaking of palate cleansers. But yeah, no, so I mean, I think we would like to jump right in and stop thinking about Marvel and start thinking about all the amazing stories that are in From a Certain Point of View.
Wait, but alcohol.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're alcohol.
Kristen, what are you drinking?
Oh, my God. wait, let me do my one shout out, because Mallory Ortberg wrote a story for this, and she, if you guys probably don't, well, I don't know if anybody reads The Toast or did read The Toast when it was a thing, but she is one of my favorite fucking queer ladies, and she makes me laugh so hard on Twitter, and it was so cool to see that they asked her to do this, because she's just a bundle of very cool fun. So
yeah, I mean, there's fantastic people. There's Mallory Ortberg, there's Nnedi Okorafor, and I apologize if I'm butchering anyone's name. There's Zoraida Solo. There's just a bunch of people who are fantastic.
It's not her actual name, though. It's like, Solo's not her actual last name.
Is that just her Instagram handle? And I just wrote it on my brain.
Yes, that is exactly what you just said.
It's her Instagram handle. I was looking at Instagram before this and not the book.
It's all good, Chris. But
hang
let's
on,
do...
we're recording and we can edit this out. I'm gonna just go get the book.
Yeah, I have it in front of me.
All right, what's her name?
I feel so bad. I'm so sorry, everybody.
I don't know. Let me open the.
I mean, I know who wrote the stories we wrote. We read.
We wrote all these stories.
All by myself.
Zoraida Cordova.
I knew it was
Zoraida Cordova. Thank you.
Yes.
I was going to say, as I was saying it, I'm like, is her name really Solo? That's really convenient. Yeah, no, it's not.
Oh,
it's easy.
God.
Okay. Anyway, let's just start before.
Yeah. What are you guys drinking?
We're not enough. That's the answer. We're drinking a delicious 2013 Ridge Winery's Syrah Grenache blend. It's quite tasty. It's a little drier than I expected, but in a good way.
I love big dry red wines.
Oh, this is delicious. I'm sorry, I just took my first sip and now I'm really happy. All right, Keeks, what do you got?
I am drinking some East Coast ass beer. I am drinking Dogfish Head Liquid Truth Serum IPA, which is fucking good. And it is exactly what it says in the bottle, which is truthfully hoppy without being deceptively bitter. And it's got some really
classic
cool art by, I think, somebody called... He is named, he's not called, Mark Spusta, sure, Mark with a Q.
Called, and, good, you're so Canadian now.
Oh God, I don't want to talk about it, I don't even do it on purpose. And actually the art is like super cool, it has some like weird hops dancing and there's a man, so I'll take a photo of it for the, I mean as always, Dogfish Head does great labels. So
aww.
They do. Their label art is fantastic.
I'm sorry, you said East Coast beer, and I was like, Keeks, you're drinking a fucking Yingling. I'm gonna.
Oh, I wish. No, we can't. I can't get Yingling here.
Fuck's
no,
sake.
But Milton, Delaware, Dogfish Head, one of my favorite breweries.
I thought it was in Maryland.
No, their original brewery is in Milton, Delaware. They do brew beer at that brew pub in, I assume it's in Bethesda. I don't know where it is in Maryland. And then they have a couple, I think, in Virginia as well. But the original.
Yeah, I was going to say they definitely have some brew pubs in Virginia. I don't know.
Yep. And they do brew there at some point. But their original brewery is in Milton, Delaware, and they actually have two breweries within like that little area. They have like one brew. I know too much about this.
I love you.
Oh, and then
Chris,
I have a backup.
You just like stop saying things that you think are facts while you're ahead. Just stop.
No, it's fine. I love correcting him. correcting white men is one of my favorite things in the world.
Amen.
and then I have on backup because we chatted a bunch in the beginning of before we started recording, so I'm actually almost done that. And I think the truth serum comes in at 6.8. Yeah, 6.8. So it's not incredibly strong. It's pretty strong. And then I have a Fort George Big Guns on hold next to me, and that's actually deceptively named. It's a session IPA. It's only 4.2, so I'm probably actually gonna go to the fridge and get another one of these really alcoholic beers before I drink that one, because it's fucking Friday and this has been a week.
There you go.
Actually, before we get into it, I'm gonna actually do that.
All right, so let us finally get down to it after stupid white people and beer talk. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about is, why are these particular short stories as opposed to novels? And the reason why I want to ask that is because I feel like short stories often get a bad rap when it comes to writing. They're not as lucrative for people to be writing as opposed to novels. Novels are the ones that get all the press and the awards and all that, you know, good stuff that actually feeds the writers and keeps them housed and whatnot. But there's a lot to be said about how useful and good the short story form can be, and sometimes even better than a novel. I can go on and on about this for like a million years, but
I fucking love short stories for whatever it's worth.
Bless you. All right, but anyway, I can do a little nerding at it, but a little later. But I just wanted to get y'all's take on that.
Yes. as my great transition that I always use.
yes.
I mean, just like I just said, I actually really fucking love short stories. That was one of my favorite English classes that I took in college, was specifically about short stories.
Same.
No, but I mean, I think it's just a really cool form of storytelling. And I think especially with this specific, for people who don't know what a certain point of view is, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, because I've done so little background research about it. But I think it's all like short stories from like a particular point in time in the Star Wars universe, right? Just told from a bunch of different points of view.
It's specifically A New Hope.
Yeah. Correct. Yes. I know that, but it's all from like right in that time frame. I guess is more of what I was getting at. Yes. I mean,
what do you mean? I don't get it. What do you mean time frame?
The timeline of the movie is what I'm assuming.
Yes. It like these are characters who exist in the movie and are like witnessing the events of the movie as we are.
Correct. So we're just getting a bunch of different points of view from like one specific point in time, I guess was my, that's why
in the specific,
yes.
Yeah. In the specific like time frame encapsulated by the movie.
I mean, I think that's what just makes it a really cool way to tell these specific stories is that, it's both showing us that there's a lot to tell behind everything that we're seeing, and also that, you know, these probably shouldn't be novels. I mean, I would read novels about any of this, but that's because I'm a crazy person. I don't know. I don't have a good reason for why they shouldn't be novels, but I thought short stories suited all of these baby stories really well. Like all these jumping off.
I really like it as short stories. Hey, Kristen is literally the person who just texted me. That's what that buzzing was. So that's not my fault. That's Kristen's fault.
No fucking buzzing on the table. Fuck you.
I like that they're short stories, and I think that their short stories because these are, they're not heroes, right? They're like the quote unquote normal people. They're the background characters. And so it's interesting to see, because even when, you know, we've talked about in books like Inferno Squad and Thrawn, where we see the, you know, the, we've talked about the day-to-day Imperial life, but like, those are still main characters. Those are still characters that we are supposed to be following and care about and have this connection to. Whereas short stories, we're literally just seeing people off the street or off the dunes in the case of some of the same people. And they're characters that we've never seen before and very possibly we'll never see again. And the short stories get us, short stories give us the opportunity to get that glimpse into their lives without, you know, needing to, like, basically they allow us to tell the story. They allow the authors to tell the story without, you know, needing to draw it out into a whole novel, which just wouldn't make sense for these characters.
Yes.
Good one, Kate.
So, yeah. wait, can I like nerd out?
Yeah,
please.
Right. We're doing it. Obviously, I agree with you both. I'm going to use the literary terms because I'm gross and
no, that's not gross. I've
been university trained.
Ew.
Ew. So, like you were saying, Chris, these stories are basically slice of life sort of things. Like, there are these, they're, you know, obviously they're stories. They are not just profiles of characters. They have plots and everything. But the whole point of it is to give these snippets of insight into, you know, other parts of the galaxy, other parts of, like, what's going on. You know, shed new light on a movie that we've all seen a million billion times. But at the same time, if you've taken, I don't know, if you've done any reading or learning or whatever about short stories, one of the things you might have heard is that short stories need to be precise because, you know, in their wording and their plotting, everything, because there's, you have to pack so much into such a relatively small space. I don't know if any of you follow Brandon G. Taylor on Twitter, but he is an editor for Electric Literature, which is a just literary journal publishing new writers who are just coming up and haven't been really widely published at all. And he's also doing his MFA in fiction. And one of the things that he said recently that I found really interesting is that novels can be sprawling and they don't have to be perfect because it has so much space and the weak parts of the novel, you know, you won't really notice them because overall the effect is going to be something you enjoy. Whereas with a short story, you've got, you know, you don't have 300, 400 pages to do that kind of work. So nothing can be slack. Everything has to be set up pretty much perfectly. And what that does, I think, in the case of From a Certain Point of View, is that while we're getting these slice of life views of all these characters who are kind of, you know, inconsequential, otherwise they would have been in the movie, because it's in a short story form and because everything about a short story has to be near perfect for it to work, they're still getting a lot of weight and a lot of attention. Not the same amount of attention that, you know, Luke Skywalker gets, but it shows that I think that these people are being taken seriously. Otherwise, you know, first of all, why would you even have this project? But second of all, this form is perfect for that purpose.
R4-D5 is not inconsequential.
R5-D4, excuse you.
Thank you. Sorry. Bad motivator droid.
It's me.
It's Kate.
Literally my Twitter bio.
Yeah. But I mean, that's kind of the beauty of it, though. Like,
he doesn't even have a bad motivator. Mm-hmm. He's just a good guy.
I know, right? That's kind of the beauty of these stories, though. Like, they feel inconsequential. Like, it's kind of billed as inconsequential characters, but the whole point of this is that none of them are, right? Like, they all, any one of these people that we read about could have changed the course of Star Wars as we know it. You know, R5-D4 could have gone home with Luke, and R2 never would have made it to Ben Kenobi, and that's that. And, you know, he never would have fought Darth Vader on the Death Star, and Luke never would have destroyed the Death Star. You know, Jot the Jawa could have erased R2's memory. I'm trying to think who else.
No, that's exactly right.
I mean, that's it. That's it so far, Chris. That was good.
No, it's good. Yeah, honestly. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, you know, if you guys have read those stories about, like, parallel universes and, you know, the different branching paths the different paths can take, and then those shatter points where things happen. I don't know. But what you just said kind of reminds me of that. That's not really related to goddamn anything. I just think it's cool.
So what you're saying is on Tatooine 77, Gardula the Hutt is taking over Ben Kenobi's land in the jungle wastes right now, is what you're telling me.
Yes.
That's what I heard her say.
Sorry, that was just like a really... it wasn't like a deep cut reference to anything except that me and Kate have been married and together long enough that she understands my stupid jokes when nobody else does.
Stop being married. It's annoying. I'm just kidding. You guys are wonderful.
Chris, that joke isn't even funny to me, though.
I know, but you got it. That was the point. It doesn't need to be funny. You just need to get it.
Oh, I hate you both. Oh, my God. Great.
All right.
Moving on. Let's talk about Jawas.
And then the second thing I want to talk about, at least for this first, what, quarter-ish of the book that we've written so far?
We've read. We didn't read it. We didn't write it. You said the book that we've written. We did not write the book.
I wish I'd written this book.
Over 40 people wrote this book. We are not any of them.
Damn it. Delray, call me.
She writes great Kinara fanfic.
Thanks.
Thanks. Just facts. I'm just here with the facts.
It's really embarrassing. So, as I was saying before I made a Freudian slip, the first portion of this book that we've read now, I can't stop laughing. I just want to talk about, since this is a story collection and therefore that implies a relationship between all the stories, besides the fact that it's a collection about characters who exist in the timeline of A New Hope, and these were all written for the 40th anniversary of Star Wars. Putting those things aside, what are some of the common themes that you both saw kind of threaded throughout this first batch of stories that we've looked at?
Hashtag sacrifice, hashtag something bigger. Hashtag hope.
Yeah, what I really noticed. Wait,
no, like you say more about that.
Oh, sorry, I'm just being annoying. I mean, I think all of those things.
Now I'm putting you on the spot, though.
Oh no, please do. That's fine. I mean, I'm just like laughing at when we were in middle school and they were like, "What are one word themes?" Like, okay, that's okay, sure. yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the characters that we've read are like striving to be independent and striving for, you know, to know that there's you know, they know there's something more out there in the universe that's outside of the surface of this fucking sand planet. Sand gets everywhere. And I mean, this is like the latter half of what we read, but I think all of the stories that we read of folks who live on Tatooine, they kind of want to leave, or they kind of want to do something bigger than what they're currently doing.
That's like a great point. It's totally mirroring Luke's perspective on life before he leaves Tatooine.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was something that really struck me, particularly for the Tatooine stories, but also for, you know, some of the other characters that we read about. You just get a great sense of a desire to escape what they see as their destiny. You know, whether it's Jot the Jawa wanting to escape from the Sandcrawler and see the stars, whether it's Rey Rin wanting to achieve her potential, whether it's through the Force or just getting off the planet. If it's R5-D4 who just wants to get bought and work on some moisture evaporators. If it's Aunt Beru who wants to open a cafe in Mos Eisley. It's you have all these characters who have dreams that we didn't know about. And all we knew about was Luke's dream, because Star Wars is Luke's story. Like, it's Leia's and Han's too, but the first one in particular is Luke's story.
It's the Skywalker saga, dude.
Exactly.
It's the Skywalker and so, story.
And all we know is that we see Luke looking longingly into the twin sunset. But everybody LOL. Else sees that sunset too.
Sorry. Just don't bring up Luke looking into the twin sunset. Keep going. I'm sorry.
I had such a great heavy point that I was about to drop, Kristen. You ruined it.
You brought up Luke brooding into the sunset.
You're grounded.
Like, what do you want from me?
You're grounded. Mom says you're grounded.
No.
But you do have, like, everybody else is looking into that same sunset on Tatooine. You even have Tarvin Lareka, the stormtrooper in Christy Golden's story, The Bucket. Also, shout out to Tarvin Lareka, also in Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad by Christy Golden.
Fuck yeah.
And he's kind of like looking to do something. He's looking to do good. Like, he's, you know, quote unquote, he sees himself as a good Imperial. He's looking to keep order. He's not looking to murder people. And so you have these characters who want to escape their own circumstances and escape their own boring life and destiny because they think that they can do more. And I feel like that theme speaks to why Star Wars was just so universally accepted when it came out in 1977, because you had, you know, and obviously this relates back to the hero's journey, but you have this kind of activation phase where something spurs characters to be better and to strive. And that's something that we can all see in these characters, like whether it's, you know, children looking at Luke or Leia and seeing it in them. Now we have characters seeing it in themselves and aspiring for more for themselves. And I feel like that's just kind of a really beautiful tie back to the feelings of the original movie and what made Star Wars so great in the first place.
Totally.
Okay, I have a point.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that okay?
Absolutely.
I didn't want to cut your
point. No, you're grounded. We're moving on. No, I'm kidding.
Damn!
No, just to build on what Chris said, though, I mean, it's part of what makes it so good and interesting and so universal is not only, you know, we can all relate to dreaming bigger things, right? But it's just so poignantly displayed in there actually being, like, intergalactic travel and just like the physical means to kind of go beyond what we as human earthlings thought was possible, that just like bridges the gap and is such like a symbol for, you know, a really thinly veiled symbol that is not thinly veiled at all, of possibility that is just so interesting and universal. You know, we have all of these thoughts and feelings about it, but then we also literally have people, you know, traveling what I assume is billions of miles, right, to go do other shit that they couldn't do if they weren't able to do that. And that's really fucking cool.
Yeah, absolutely. That is such a great point because, you know, the Star Wars movies came out following, you know, the decades of the space race. And what was that but, you know, purely aspirational? People talk now with all these dystopian sci-fi about, oh, we're ruining Earth with climate change, just we better go find another planet. But no, our original intent in going to the stars was that it was the farthest thing we could reach, right? Like, why not go farther and reach higher and do all that good, exciting stuff? So it's interesting, you know, thinking about it now that you've said that, how Luke needs to go off planet to reach his destiny, to fulfill his highest potential. It's the same thing that, like, that history shown us that humans want to do. That's so beautiful, Keeks. Like, I'm so happy right now.
I literally have a tattoo about that, so of course I would bring that up.
And kind of to add on to that, what I think this book has done so beautifully is just showing all the different, you know, the diversity of perspectives. And obviously, I mean diversity in the, you know, racial and species diversity, but I also just mean in a life circumstances way. You know, I mean, we've talked in previous episodes about how Star Wars so far is, you know, really a story of white protagonists. You know, white people can see themselves on the screen and see their stories reflected. And people of color haven't necessarily had that opportunity, at least until Rogue One, if you're a man of color. And from a certain point of view, just in these 10 stories, I mean, we have Tarvin, who's the person who's living his dream job and realizes it's not everything it's cracked up to be. We have Rayrin, who is the child of a very traditional society who wants to escape and branch out for herself. We have R5, who was really, I think, kind of a really touching story of disability and how to overcome it. And you have Beru, who's, you know, the classic single mother who loves her child more than anything in the world. And at the same time, can't get out of her head, you know, what if I'd worked? What if I'd stayed going to work?
I mean, not even a single mother. That's just being a woman and raising children. Yes.
That's true. Sorry. She's not I did not mother. Mean single mother. I meant stay-at-home mother. Apologies.
Yes. No, it's all good.
Yeah. But and then Jot, I feel like, is almost kind of the closest parallel to Luke that we've read in these first few stories, because he's the one who, you know, is fine, kind of going about his job, kind of bored, doesn't really know what he's doing, and then sees a hologram and it changes his life and he needs more now. And he goes out and he gets more. And so you have all these different views that, you know, just people in different life circumstances can associate with and can see themselves in.
Jot is so fucking relatable.
I love Jot. Jot's one of my favorite stories so
far. Sam.
This is Precious. Stories in the Sand by Griffin McElroy.
Yes.
Yeah. What was the first story? Because that really fucked me up.
Ramis by Gary Whitta.
Yeah, really, I don't know.
Just fucked me up. I was like, why are we reading this? I'm crying.
I know.
Fuck my life.
I don't know if you saw on the Twitter today, but I was talking to somebody and that person mentioned that story basically destroyed them. And I responded to them and I was like, oh yeah, I was reading Ramis and I was just like, oh, he never got to finish his letters to his wife and his daughter. Wait, it doesn't matter because they were on Alderaan. Fuck me up.
I know, dude. I know. And then fucked me up so bad.
I know. I was just like, Chris was like cooking and I was sitting on the couch reading this book and screaming. And then Gary would have liked it and he's probably like sitting in his house cackling at us and our pain. So thanks for that, bro.
He is. We should tell him we talked about him on this pod.
Yes.
Because we just tore ourselves out. Absolutely. We're not apologizing for it.
I mean, yes. Can I move on to the next point?
Or? Yeah. I think we kind of beat that dead horse enough.
I love beating dead horses.
Beat that dead bantha.
Aww.
Dead tauntaun? Slice that dead tauntaun?
I love dead tauntauns. They keep stupid Luke alive.
Thought they smelled bad on the outside, though.
Oh, man.
I'm quitting the pod. Anyway,
Kate quitting the pod. Drink again.
Oh, my God. Making a bingo card as well.
If you want a card. Oh, fuck me. I had a segue for this, and then y'all ruined it. Anyway, so the other thing I wanted to talk
okay,
about...
Okay, your segue was, can we move on? So...
I assumed you would edit that out like a good daughter, but I just guess this is why you're grounded.
Oh my God.
Fuck.
Why would I ever edit that out?
I'm surrounded by ingrates. I'm going to disown Kristen. We're getting a divorce and we're done.
The incompetence on this podcast is staggering.
Boring conversation anyway.
Oh my God, I wish y'all could see my face right now because I'm just like about to throw my wine glass at Chris's head.
No, you're not. It still has wine in it.
I can chug.
That's fair point.
Sure can.
Any fucking way. The other theme that I wanted to talk about that I saw in this first part of the book is that, Chris, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but pretty much all of these stories were written from the points of view of species that are largely written off by the main characters of the movies, especially the Jawas and the Tusken Raiders. You know, you have them basically being painted as these, you know, 3PO calls them disgusting creatures, and and that's kind of how we see them. You know, Luke doesn't think very highly of that, of either of these species. Tusken Raiders are depicted as being incredibly violent, and, you know, the basically the only emotion they're depicted as having is anger. Even in the prequel trilogy, you know, they kidnap Anakin's mom and they torture her for, I don't know, funsies? I don't even fucking know. Like, they are depicted as being a species, basically, of pointless violence.
Are you implying that an aspect of one of the prequel movies wasn't fully thought out?
How dare you?
I know, it's... I can't imagine where I got that from.
Hashtag breaking news.
Good lord.
Jesus. They are true.
So... Anyway, you guys are insufferable today. Jesus Christ. Oh my
we always
God.
Are. You're just usually more patient, so I'm sorry for whatever we did.
I'm really
pushing
that
made
today.
It worse.
I don't know. So in kind of an interesting way, by focusing on specifically on the Jawas and the Tusken Raiders, what the authors of these stories are doing is they're addressing something we've talked about a lot on the pod, which is speciesism in Star Wars. And I couldn't help but think about, you know, relate this back to when we were reading Inferno Squad. And at some point in the book, Del's thinking about Pikau, the Trogrophon, who's a member of the Dreamers, the rebel group that he's undercover infiltrating. And he actually develops a friendship with him and develops, like, these real feelings of, you know, caring for Pikau like they were real friends. And he thinks to himself that Pikau's an engineering and mechanical genius, and Del thinks that it's really a shame that he can't extract Pikau and bring those skills to the Empire, because it would actually be really helpful, or that Pikau had to suffer in the first place because of the Empire, because, you know, they weren't using those skills. And it's that kind of, you know, dismissiveness in the Empire that we can see that throughout all of Star Wars. And I couldn't help tying that back in with Rayren's story, because, you know, what we see in that story is that she's force sensitive, and, you know, it's like, how many Tusken Raiders were written off by the Jedi who could have been amazing Jedi, like could have changed the entire order, who are just not trained and not picked up because, you know, the Jedi were like, these are a bunch of fucking savages and they don't deserve to be trained.
Yeah, it really reminds me of, and I apologize because I don't remember who it was on Twitter that kind of posted this thread earlier this week. There was somebody on Star Wars Twitter. And if somebody is listening to this and remembers this thread and wants to call it out to me, then we'll happily credit whoever came up with this thought. But it really got me thinking. The line in Phantom Menace where Qui-Gon says, talking about Anakin, had been born in the Republic, we would have discovered him earlier. And just the thought of the number of Force-sensitive children that have just gone by the wayside and have not achieved their full potential because they're not part of the Republic, or they're not human, or, you know, what is considered a civilized species. Like, all these people that we don't get to hear about in the story because the Force or history or whatever you want to say in the Star Wars universe left them behind. Kind of going back to Kate, your original point on written off populations, I don't really have much of a point to this, but let's add Rodians to this, because Greedo is, and there's actually a couple more stories. The next couple mention Greedo as well.
Oh God.
But he does not come off well in this book.
What a sad little man. Jesus.
I mean, Greedo's always sucked, but
word.
Hot take, but although he sounds like he was heartbroken. I wonder what fuck shit Han did to him, man.
He stole his girl.
Jesus Christ.
Fucking Han.
Apparently.
Of course.
Miss Cecilia girl.
Of course. That's the reason Greedo hates
what
Han.
What was her name? I couldn't even like pronounce it.
Ursella,
in my head.
I think.
Unselta.
Unselta, thank you.
Unselta. Oh, that's a great name. Good job. Good job, Star Wars. You did it. One in a row.
Oh God.
Oh Christ.
Off balcony.
We're
on something today, that's for sure.
Right?
Yeah, we're
seriously.
Yeah. It's Friday. I actually love a Friday pod because we're always so fucking insane.
We
really are.
I've been punchy since this morning. I didn't even get enough sleep today. I didn't even have an special amount of caffeine today. I took a nap, but that's not unusual. So
it's
I don't know what's up with me.
There's one point that Kate just added on here, but I'm going to lead us through it because I was the one who made us stop talking about it before. And this is something that we talked about when we read
Ahsoka.
Ahsoka, thank you. And what if Qui-Gon had lived? And we talked about this when we were reading Ahsoka because we were talking about how Anakin and Obi-Wan really honed each other. But if Anakin was at all hurt by having Obi-Wan as his master instead of Qui-Gon and kind of what its influence on Ahsoka was as well.
Right. And also, of course, the Ahsoka novel, pretty much smack dab in the middle of it, has that interlude from Anakin's point of view where he briefly wonders while he's on Christophsis in the middle of the Clone Wars, you know, he wonders himself what would have happened if Qui-Gon had lived. And I think it's pretty clear from that interlude in Ahsoka that it's not the first time he's thought about that. He's probably thought about it a million times.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's what's clear from this is it's not the first time a lot of people have thought about that. Qui-Gon himself in Claudia Gray's story, Master and Apprentice. What was that face?
Oh, no, I spelled Qui-Gon wrong and I saw you fix it.
Oh, yeah.
It's this last name that has two N's. My bad.
Yeah, I was not going to call you out on that, but
I call myself out. I'll call myself out when I spell things wrong. I can't spell. It's fine.
Me neither, Kate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, what we do see is like of the many mistakes that the Jedi made that Qui-Gon is kind of pondering in the afterlife, the living force, the cosmic force, I guess is what he's in now. Of what he's pondering, he's still thinking about what if, like what if Darth Maul hadn't killed him and he had been able to raise and train Anakin. And he says to Obi-Wan, straight up, you weren't ready. And that's really powerful.
That's harsh, man. He's not wrong, but that's real harsh.
It's like, I think it's the clearest accusation's not the right word, but the clearest accusation of Obi-Wan that we get, the clearest
implication.
Thank you. The clearest implication of Obi-Wan that we get that he wasn't necessarily the best master for Anakin. Everything that we, you know, see in whether it's Revenge of the Sith, whether it's in their relationship in the original trilogy, particularly in Clone Wars, it all suggests that, you know, like Obi-Wan, you know, bumbles his way through a few things, but he's a great master and he and Anakin have a fantastic relationship. Or at least they did until Mustafar, until Anakin became Vader.
I mean, you say
at least until Mustafar is going to be the title of this episode.
God damn. At least until he cut off Anakin's legs and threw him in a fucking volcano. I mean, Chris, you say that they had a great relationship, but maybe, like, was it too good of a relationship? Like, Obi-Wan says to Yoda, he's like my brother. What is that if not, like, a blaring red flag for attachment?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It's not wrong.
that's a great point. And so, like, I think this story in, you know, it's all of it's, like, 10 pages or whatever. It's, you know, short but really packed in, as Kate was saying about kind of the nature of what great short stories are. We find out that Qui-Gon very strongly thinks Obi-Wan was not ready. And that's a big part of why Anakin fell to the dark side. And Obi-Wan, of course, is, you know, doesn't totally agree with that. He says Anakin made his choice. And that's true to an extent, but it's also clear that Obi-Wan's still holding a grudge. And, you know, why wouldn't he when his self-proclaimed brother abandoned him and turned to the dark side and abandoned everything that Obi-Wan thought they believed in. And so it's just interesting, again, one of those what if questions that exist in the Star Wars universe. And this is a huge one. One thing that we want to do as we make our way through this book, obviously, there's so many stories. We can't talk about all of them. We barely talked about Ramis by Gary Whitta. We barely talked about The Bucket by Christy Golden. We just mentioned in passing The Luckless Rodian by
Renee Adier,
thank you. But I did want to, ask each of us if there are any stories that stood out to us in particular in this section. So, Kristen, I will let you start.
Oh, no. There were no pirates.
Yes, the classic tale, there were no pirates.
The classic tale of there were no pirates. Hey, tell me you wouldn't read a story that was telling you where Hondo was during this situation. I would. Hey, that was like a halfway true point. I mean, you guys heard the first story really fucked me up. That was just like super upsetting. There's just so much all around talk and just so much shit that was gonna, you know, go to hell. That the captain, I think the most upsetting part of that story for me was he knew. Sorry, I'm omitting all names of everything, but
Captain Antilles. Captain
Antilles, great. Written by
Gary Whitta.
Gary Whitta. So Captain Antilles, he's very self-reflective about, like, he knows he wants to go down with the ship. He knows he's, like, never going to see his family again, all of this stuff. And the most fucked up part about it is that he kind of thinks it's worst case scenario, right? He's hoping that Leia finds a way to get the plans to the rebels, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you know, at least I have my wife and my kids who are going to outlive me, except for they're not going to because Alderaan's about to get fucking blown up and he has no idea. Yeah. I don't know. It just really fucked with me. It just was so, so upsetting. It took me a while to get past the first story in this book, like,
yeah,
to pick it back up. I was like, oh, like, if they're all like this, I'm not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, Gary really started us off on a high note, didn't he? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, very Star Wars of him.
All right, well, while Kate is distracted waving at the hamster, I can go.
He was definitely falling asleep in his fucking food bowl.
Now he's awake.
It's relatable content.
Relatable content. I had a couple. The first one we already talked about a little bit, Jot the Jawa, in Stories in the Sand by Griffin McElroy. That story hit me hard, man. Like, that was beautiful. Like, it was WALL-E, it was Star Wars, I just loved it. I thought it was, like, I could, like, feel Jot's amazement the first time he saw the holovid of the ship crash landing on Tatooine. And, like, just his, like, awe at seeing the scope of his world. So that, I loved that, and I loved reading it. I think my favorite one, though, was The Sith of Datawork by Ken Liu, which I laughed so hard as I was reading this book. There's so much in it. There's just, like, the embracing of the monotony. There's the Data, the Data Commander, the main character.
I'm going to call him a Data Specialist.
The Data Specialist who's in charge of everything, and her exasperation at the stupidity and, like, refusal of data work of her colleagues. Just how matter of fact she is about everything. The, like, amazing puzzle that she puts together. The fucking names and numbers of the forms. Like, if you didn't catch any inside jokes in the numbering of the forms, you should go back and read that story again.
I'm a very bad Star Wars
fan.
Great,
good call, Chris.
Very bad Star Wars fan. I gotta go back and look now.
They're so funny. I laughed out loud reading that story, and I was just like, I don't know how you take a scene about the commander who fucked up talking to a data analyst and make it hilarious and poignant, and Ken Liu did it, and I'm just so impressed.
Of course he did, because he's a genius.
Accurate.
You don't win the Hugo Award in tandem, but you don't win the Hugo Award for nothing.
And Nebula
Award. Thank you.
I completely agree about the Jot the Jawa story. It's for all the reasons you said, and also because the author was able to paint, you know, such a full picture and such an emotional picture with relatively few words, honestly. There wasn't, you know, a lot in there. I think it was a he who wrote it, right?
Griffin McElroy.
Yes, thank you. Oh my god. You just said that. I'm so tired, guys. You know, there wasn't a lot in there, but all the detail that he did include was definitely devoted to the holograms, as it should be. It was kind of like an impressionist painting, you know? It's like you had to, like, it was like all these broad swaths, and then you look really closely and it's like, oh yeah, this was really pretty. And then I also really loved Master and Apprentice, which we just talked about, which is by Claudia Gray. Just because she's an incredible writer, but also because, as y'all know, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, I am so, so into weird force shit. and there's plenty of weird force shit in here. I've always wondered, you know, how force ghosts work, how they materialize, how they kind of, you know, exist when they're not in a visible form. And she totally answered all those questions for me. And also, if you've been following Star Wars publishing over at Del Rey at all, you might have heard that Claudia Gray is very interested in writing a novel about Obi-Wan in his Padawan years before The Phantom Menace and his relationship with Satine Kryze from The Clone Wars, who, of course, is the woman he fell in love with when he was a young man, and he decided not to leave the Jedi Order for her. And just his relationship with her, and then subsequently, you know, what his relationship was like with Qui-Gon and all of that. So this was kind of a nice little entree into that relationship that Claudia Gray really wants to at some point flesh out. And I hope they give her a chance to, because I seriously need that book. I'm such a big Obi-Teen shipper.
Well, and Claudia Gray does great work. I mean, we know that already, but she did Bloodline, which were episodes four through eight.
Yeah, and also, what's kind of adding on to Master and Apprentice, I loved the Qui-Gon's kind of ode to Obi-Wan and how amazed that Obi-Wan had stayed good. And just talking about how, like, everybody who he ever loved came to a terrible end. And it's so true. And it's just, like, kind of like the internet meme of, like, the unbearable sadness of Obi-Wan. And, like, it was perfectly done.
Absolutely. I mean, there's this line, I'm not sure if it was from a Legends novel or one of the movie novelizations or a comic, where Obi-Wan's talking to Anakin when Anakin's still his Padawan, where Obi-Wan says, like, every person or living being that exists, it was made by the Force or something. And Anakin asks him, so what were you made for, Master? And he goes, infinite sadness. And he's kind of joking, but he's also definitely not joking. I have a really sad Obi-Wan fan mix, guys, so, like, just at me if you want that.
I believe, although we will not be reading it at this point, I believe that is from the Anakin and Obi-Wan Marvel comic miniseries.
Thank you.
Oh, great. Or not great, depending.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, well, anyway, this has been quite an episode, so I think we can leave it there. Next episode, we hope that you'll continue to read From a Certain Point of View with us. We're going to be reading the next 10 stories, not for nothing, through an incident report. We're super excited to keep going. In the meantime, hit us up.
Through and including, correct, Chris?
Through and including, yes. So read an incident report and stop.
Wait, are we just reading 10 stories at a time, basically, is how you divided it up?
Yes.
Okay, great.
So in the meantime, hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Tumblr, at BookWarsPod. Email us, bookwarspod@gmail.com. We, as always, love interacting with you and love the community of Star Wars, particularly in these last few weeks leading up to The Last Jedi. It's such a great time to be a fan. Please, 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 if you enjoy the podcast, rate and review and subscribe on iTunes and on Stitcher and on Google Play. It's the best way for people to discover the podcast and to help us grow and help the fandom grow.
If you're really lazy like me, you can actually just, like, rate it on iTunes and not say anything. They don't make you say anything. You can just rate it, and you can just be like, oh, it's done. Great.
Yeah, there you go.
And I think that's probably true of the other services. That's just, like, the thing that I know about.
Yeah, so just, you know, slide in into iTunes, hit 5 stars, and run away.
Exactly.
And then slide into our DMs, because we want to hear about your shitty smoke theories.
Exactly. I mean, we're all about minimal effort here on the Book Wars Pod.
Yes.
And speaking of minimal effort, now we'll end it with some plugs for the things we didn't create. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. I'm Chris. For Kate and Kristen, thank you so much for listening to episode 28 of the Book Wars Pod, and we'll talk to you next week. Stay on target.